You may proceed.
May it please the court and Ms. Van Branwick from the Dodge County Attorney's Office. I represent the appellant, Samantha, who is an 11-year-old fifth grader at Johnson Crossing in Fremont, Nebraska. I filed an appeal after she was adjudicated as habitually truant by the Dodge County Juvenile Court. Under that part of the Juvenile Code, codified as 43-2473B. My appeal has to do with whether or not Samantha was really truant, and I would acknowledge she missed 48 out of 123 days of school. And then secondly, the interplay between the Compulsory Education Act, which is, I believe, 79, the specific provision is 79209 that I'm talking about.
Counsel, go for it.
Sure.
What is the overall objective in this appeal with regard to the termination of truancy of the juvenile?
Your Honor, my objective is that what occurred was that a case that was not yet ripe was heard, the child was adjudicated. I think it's a mistake that can be repeated. I would argue the Compulsory Education Act has remedial measures that are required prior to adjudicating a juvenile, and those remedial measures are outlined in the committee statements for LB 800 and LB 933, I believe.
What is state's burden of proof?
Beyond reasonable doubt. I did notice there was a preponderance reference, and I apologize for that, but it is beyond a reasonable doubt. So I would say that when this case first started, 48 out of 123 absences, it seems very clear that she was habitually truant from school. I would argue that in this case, this particular school had a very specific definition of truancy. If you miss school without the consent of a parent or an authorized guardian. In this case, it is very clear Samantha had that consent for almost each and every of the 48 absences.
Well, I thought you had 28 consent or 27 consents, and there were about 21 of them that were, or that she had 21 excuses, and 27 were unexcused.
Right, and that would be part of my appeal, Your Honor, because the truancy definition of the school, I understand, does not track the Compulsory Education Act, which basically says the school can authorize this absence, the parent, it doesn't really matter. The school has a different standard for unexcused absences. So when Samantha was sent home by the school nurse five different times, that was counted as unexcused. The expectation is she would go to the doctor, get a note from the doctor, and take it back to school. When mom called and said she has a fever, she's not coming to school, that's counted as an unexcused absence. The expectation is she would make a doctor's appointment, go to the doctor, get a note. So my first argument is that she didn't meet the school's definition of truancy. She met the school's definition of unexcused absences, which brings me to the interplay between Compulsory Education Act and the Juvenile Code. Because she had more than 20 unexcused absences, the state then relies on the Compulsory Education Act to say, well, you trigger certain provisions here, and now the county attorney is involved. Now at trial, it became clear that the provisions of the Compulsory Education Act that addressed remedial measures was an evaluation done of the child, was some kind of educational evaluation done? Was there a plan?
Well, what happens to the child as a result of finding that you had 27 absences that weren't supported by a doctor's note? What happens to the child after this adjudication?
Well, the judge, I suppose, has jurisdiction over the child and the parents to effectuate an attendance under 3B at school, right?
So, I mean, this is sealed record of the juvenile? And
sure, it could lead to more serious repercussions. I would argue, Your Honor, that in a case where a parent calls a child in sick with a fever, the expectation to incur monetary obligations, go to the doctor, get a note each and every time, when it was documented this child did have issues, is an unrealistic expectation. That a parent has a fundamental liberty interest to parent this child without any kind of intervention by the courts. And the committee statements for those legislative bills pertaining to Compulsory Education Act were directed at just that, not entangling families and courts as a first resort for truancy. So my argument is that the state bootstrapped that 20 unexcused absences from the Compulsory Education Act as the grounds to adjudicate Samantha, because Samantha did not meet the definition of truancy pursuant to the school policy.
But does 79201 have interplay with the with this issue, and looking at that statute, it says, paraphrasing, the parent must ensure that the child attend, except when illness makes, let's see, makes, when illness or, makes attendance impossible or impracticable.
There was evidence taken at trial that Samantha did produce some doctor's notes, but she didn't produce enough doctor's notes, hence the 48 absences with only 20.
Well, but who had the burden of proof?
And
my question is, did the state prove that it was, attendance was impossible or impracticable?
The state produced a guidance counselor that testified that the evidence that Samantha's parents presented for medical excuses was not sufficient to get her under that 20-day level of the Compulsory Education Act. I would anticipate it was a factual finding by the court. And so, you know, what I rely on is the fact that we use the 20 days of unexcused absences in that act, but we disregard the remedial measures that are meant to keep families like Samantha's out of the court. Right? The purpose was that certain steps should be taken before these children are adjudicated. Courts should not be the place of first resort for truancy. That would be the purpose of the Compulsory Education Act.
Are those remedial measures directed toward the Compulsory Education Act's duties imposed upon parents to send their children to school, or are they directed to the child's truancy status under the juvenile code?
And that's really the question. I think Judge Van Pola and Ms. Van Brand referenced a 1979 case that says the Compulsory Education Act and juvenile code should not be considered in peri materia together. Since 79, there have been significant changes to the Compulsory Education Act, and when these committees meet and talk about we want to revamp truancy laws, we want to avoid entangling families in the courts, 99% of truancy cases are under the juvenile code. Maybe 1% is adjudicated under compulsory education. So if we give effect to what the legislature's intent was, I think we have to incorporate the juvenile code into the Compulsory Education Act.
Well, wouldn't that be the province of the legislature to incorporate one into the other, or to provide for some cross-referencing? And is there any statutory language suggesting that the legislature intended to do that?
That would be the best way to deal with it if there was clear and plain language, and I would submit there isn't. But nothing prevented the state from using the 20 days unexcused absence rule out of that act and applying it into the 3B case.
Is the Compulsory Education Act civil or criminal?
It has criminal repercussions. The juvenile case that I have in front of you is of course, a civil matter, is how I would treat it. But there are criminal repercussions, and I understand that. My objective here would be to say if the legislature addresses truancy, they have to know that the 3B code is 99% of the cases.
Excuse me, what are the criminal implications?
I believe the parent can be charged with a misdemeanor, and I'm not sure if it's a Class 2 or a Class 3 misdemeanor. I would say that there is some case law about some interplay between the Compulsory Education Act and the juvenile code. This court in 2007, I think it was In re Kevin K., said, this child is adjudicated under 3B. However, his parents signed him out of the Compulsory Education Act provision allowing a 16-year-old to sign out of education, therefore resolved the adjudication. It's clear there is some interplay. I'm asking this court to give effect to those remedial measures that are outlined in the Compulsory Education Act because I believe that was the legislature's
intention. So what, outside of this set of facts, what's the jurisprudence when you have a child in the juvenile court due to a set of facts that would be a crime, right? How does the juvenile court incorporate or reference the criminal jurisprudence surrounding that set of acts?
Fair question. I can say in 10 years of doing general practice, I've never seen a Compulsory Education Act prosecution.
Now, that I wasn't talking about this. Okay. This under the interplay between juvenile and Compulsory Education Act. I'm saying generally, jurisprudentially, what do you do when you're in juvenile court for a set of facts that not in juvenile court would be a crime?
Well, I think
how do you use the jurisprudence around that crime?
If I understand your question correctly, I think it, for lack of a better term, may be used as leverage in the juvenile court that the parents are perhaps committing a crime, although it's a different standard, of
course. Or if the child is committing a crime.
Sure. In a case such as Samantha's, where she's 11 years old, I think that you always adjudicate the minor, even if the parents are responsible, in juvenile court. Now, in the Compulsory Education Act, I think you would prosecute the parents.
So my question was general, but honing in on this specific, so you're saying that the criminal potential for the parent is somehow should be incorporated into the juvenile assessment?
I think that the remedial measures, the intention of the legislature, would that those would be tried to address truancy. And if we address truancy, we have to address the juvenile code, because that's 99% of truant cases. Thank you.
Good morning.
Good morning, Your Honors. May it please the Court. My name is Sarah Van Brandwijk, and I'm a Deputy County Attorney in Dodge County, Nebraska. There is no doubt, as Mr. Plachik said, that Samantha was habitually truant under 43247 subsection 3B when she was adjudicated by the juvenile court. Now, Mr. Plachik noted some doctor's notes and medical records that might have been relevant to her excuse, but that doctor who provided the medical records noted on three separate occasions that it was his recommendation that Samantha be in school, that he was not recommending her be excused for medical reasons. While the juvenile code doesn't define truancy, case law makes clear that under subsection 3B, it occurs when a child is away from school without the permission of the school. And there are a number of cases from this court that indicate that.
But isn't that a matter of degree? I mean, one day, 10 days, 30 days?
And I agree with you there, and that's where the word habitually would come in. I think that this court has used the Compulsory Education Act's 20 number requirement to kind of define that habitually portion. I don't think that it necessarily is the only way that it could be habitually, but I think most of the time, that's what we're going to be looking at. And
these have to be unexcused absences.
The Compulsory Education Act actually provides for 20 absences, one of which is unexcused. So you just need to fail to get a doctor's note one time. In the particular case that is before the court, the school permitted over 20 unexcused absences before requesting court involvement. And that leads me to a point about remedial measures. The appellant is incorrect in his assertion that the school in this case didn't provide remedial measures. Rather, there was no evidence presented. The evidence was focused on the juvenile. Had the burden be to provide those remedial measures, the evidence would have been different. So,
what is the effect, if any, of 79201, where it says a parent must see that the child attends school unless illness make attendance impossible or impractical?
And there, I believe within the school districts, they have a... they're required by that statute to adopt a policy for handling those situations.
So do you agree 201 applies?
That is the school's decision to determine if illness makes attendance impractical. They didn't make that decision here. They did just the opposite. Samantha's actual doctor was noting that she needed to be at school. So he wasn't validating this illness excuse.
So as a practical matter, once a child is adjudicated as truant, then you proceed with the dispositional phase?
That's correct. And I think that...
That's pending now?
Yes. And I think that that's an important distinction, because at the dispositional phase, we can look at fault. Juvenile courts don't look at fault when they look at an adjudication under 3B. It doesn't matter if the parent is withholding the child, or perhaps even if the school for some reason interfered. We just look at the status of the child. Where is the child at? If it falls within the statutory authority, then the court can step in and assist. At disposition, we look at how to remedy the situation. Now, the appellant's focus on the school policy's definition of truancy is clearly misguided. How a school defines truancy for internal coding does not supersede the clear legal authority as to what habitual truancy is under the juvenile code.
Do you agree the state's burden was beyond a reasonable doubt?
Yes, I do. And there was some argument that the appellant lacked notice because of how the school policy defined truancy, but there's evidence that Samantha and her parents received at least 6 letters from the school warning of pending court involvement. There were conversations between the guidance counselors and Samantha and her parents. And then there was that request for release of medical documentation. The school didn't want court involvement if it wasn't necessary, if they could address this with her doctor in terms of a medical situation. Now,
so is it your point that the doctor's letter provided the evidence that established beyond a reasonable doubt that there was truancy?
It would be my position that the 48 out of 123 days school was in session, with 27 of those unexcused by the school, shows a routine and habitual pattern of being absent from school without the school's consent. I think the medical documentation, if the appellant was able to show that it really clearly did prevent her from attending school, then perhaps that would be a factor here. But I don't think that's what was shown. And so I think the doctor's notes and the medical evidence are almost irrelevant, but they negate the medical excuse in that they actually say she should be at school. Now, the second argument by appellant focuses on the interplay between the Compulsory Education Act, Section 79209, which enumerates some remedial measures. These remedial measures were actually added in 1994. They were not added this past legislative session. And I want to emphasize again that it's not the school that failed to provide remedial measures here. It's the state that did not present evidence, as that's unrelated. It's a portion of Chapter 79, which makes parents criminally liable, Class 3 misdemeanor under 79210, any violation of the act, versus the juvenile court's jurisdiction, which is focused on rehabilitating a child, ensuring that they have proper education. And the juvenile court has exclusive original jurisdiction over habitually truant youth. I think that's important. As Mr. Platchek pointed out, in the interest of Rice, in 1979, this court held that the legislator, when enacting legislation, is presumed to have knowledge of all previous legislation, and if it intended to equate non-attendance under Chapter 79 with jurisdiction under the Juvenile Code, it would have explicitly stated so. The case law does make clear that there is this interplay in this relationship. However, no case law or statute has ever extended 79209 to the juvenile court's exercise of jurisdiction. And the words were in Rice that the juvenile code should not be construed in pari materia. Additionally, the purpose of the juvenile code is in stark contrast, to the punitive remedy set forth in 79210.
In other words, you're saying the juvenile code basically has its premise as what's in the best interest of the child.
That's correct. There is a case law, Henry Kevin K, that says that in order to terminate jurisdiction over a truant youth, the court isn't required to use a best interest standard. But that is certainly a factor that plays into all juvenile court cases. And I do want to note, there's absolutely no evidence in the record that suggests 99% of cases are handled as 3B. I'm not familiar with the exact numbers, but I've never been presented with them, and that is not an accurate reflection. Now, when LB 933 did amend 79209, it provided the school an opportunity to work with the student past the 20-day mark. It didn't add remedial measures, as I discussed earlier, but it did preserve the language that nothing, I think this is very important, nothing in the statute prevents the county attorney from being involved at any point. And even if 79209 would be applicable, it would be inappropriate for the school's remedial measures to be considered a condition precedent to jurisdiction over the juvenile court. I think that there are other remedies potentially that could be developed. I won't speculate to what those are, but I don't think that should act as a condition precedent to a separate portion in a separate body being able to acquire jurisdiction over a child in need of educational support.
When you refer to nothing prevents the county attorney from being involved, why in that statute would the county attorney be involved?
Well, I do have the ability, or any county attorney has the choice in front of them when they receive notification about a student who's having absence issues, to file criminal charges against the parents if there's certain facts involved, potentially educational neglect, and also the 3B.
So the county attorney could be involved with respect to the Compulsory Education Act and its sequelae?
Yes, and I think there are other places within the Education Act that reference to the county attorney, reference making reports that are required and such. So, if that answers your questions, thank you very much. And I respectfully request the court affirm the County Court of Dodge County.
Thank you.
Thank you, Ryan.
Thank you.